This is Crucial Tech, a podcast about technology that affects us all, but few of us understand, presented in a format that you can consume in the time it takes to go to and from the grocery store. I'm your host, Lou Covey, and I probably know more about it than you do. And if I don't, I know someone who does. It has been a bad month for cybercrime. Yes, attacks are on the way up. Yes, they are still extorting money and causing infrastructure chaos. But there is a massive shadow-busting spotlight on them right where they live, and defense technology is advanced enough that they are hearing footfalls of law enforcement behind them. Foremost in the bad news is the international takedown of the Lockbit ransomware emporium and its customers. Like the cockroaches they are scattering and reorganizing as we speak, but it is much more difficult to hide now. The governments of the world now have the technology and the industry partners to find them. When the world started its internet addiction, our collective tech was not designed to be secure, and bit by bite, the criminals found every weakness possible, even some that no one thought was a weakness. The hardware engineers said it was a software issue and ignored the obvious holes. The software people said it was an IT issue. IT people said the hardware and software engineers were stupid, but not as stupid as the users. And that's where the responsibility has laid for a long time, on the users who had to learn how bad the technology was and start using it like they were disarming a bomb every morning when they turned on their phones. But thanks to the rise of the cybersecurity industry, users are better educated, and the makers of the tech are being held accountable in the halls of capitals all around the world. We haven't won the war, and we may never win, but the criminals' bank accounts are shrinking, and prosecutions are rising. A recent report from Coveware offered some staggering numbers about the state of ransomware. In 2019, about 75% of the ransomware victims admitted to paying the ransom. Last year, with ransomware attacks hitting an all-time high, less than a third admitted to paying. Moreover, those that did pay paid less than half of the demand through negotiation. That is all due to a combination of newly deployed defensive technology, education on cyber hygiene, and a few laws that ban the payment of ransoms. But the greed of ransomware gangs also played a major part. Companies learned that even if they paid the ransom, gangs were more likely to sell the stolen data or hit the companies again after they had recovered. Insurance companies are balking at paying out claims due to security negligence, and companies learned that the cost of restoration didn't get cheaper after paying a ransom, so why even cooperate? The rapid rise of AI in the past year and a half have opened up an entirely new front for cybercrime. Deepfake video and audio have been employed for romance scams and financial fraud almost as fast as commercial AI tools landed on the market. Recently, though, a kind of scuzzy dating app, Tinder, started requiring video selfies to crack down on the use of generative AI to produce profile pictures that were used to trick users. But the criminal use of generative AI wasn't just an attack on corporate and personal finances. State actors are employing the technology to interfere with elections. With more than 4 billion people going to the polls around the world this year, deepfake videos and audios are flooding into social media and being used in automated phone calls to potentially alter the outcomes. Most famously was a fake call from President Joe Biden to the New Hampshire Democrats, urging them not to vote in the state's primary. Unfortunately, it wasn't President Joe Biden, and it was pretty darn obvious to most people. And it only took a few weeks using AI detection tools to not only identify what company provided the technology, but the user himself. And that brings us to today's episode. We follow this theme and called up one of our favorite technologists with one of the world's greatest names, Vijay Balasubramanian, CEO of Pindrop, whose technology can reliably identify AI-generated video and audio tech. Now, Vijay would not confirm whether his product was used in this investigation. In fact, you will hear him demur saying that he can't comment on active investigations. But he said it in such a way that I'm pretty sure it was. Also, he was interviewed for articles in Wired, where he said his tool identified the call as a fake with a factor north of 99%, quote-unquote. Independent researchers at first claimed that number was hard to believe, but after running their own tests, they grudgingly admitted, yeah, that was pretty close. So after the interview, I'm going to chime in with a non-tech suggestion about how to further limit illegitimate use of AI. But before we start, I want to thank this podcaster's sponsor, Safety National Insurance. Safety National's cyber insurance protects large organizations against network security and privacy risks, reimbursing damages and financial loss arising from accidental or malicious incidents to computer networks, software, and data. Coverage options address various risks ranging from liability, business interruption, reputational harm, penalties, and more. So visit safetynational.com for additional details. And again, thank you to Safety National for their sponsorship. And now, let's hear from Vijay.
All right. So we've had some exciting times in the world since I last talked to you.
Yes, yes. You know, I think the Biden phone call, you know, was a great launching point for what we ultimately ended up launching yesterday. Because, you know, as we create deepfake systems, we're pretty particular about what tenets they must possess. And explainability was one of them. And we got to showcase that in the Biden robocall.
Yeah. Now, were you involved in the investigation of this, or did you just happen to get into Wired on that story they did?
So we're the ones who came up with the AI app, and 11 Labs actually went and suspended the account because of us.
Okay.
Yeah.
But did the White House get involved with you at all?
I can't talk about that.
Oh man, come on now.
Yeah.
We're talking about the fate of the Western world here.
No, man, that's something, you know, it's an active investigation right now. So yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
But just by the fact that you say that means that you are involved. So thanks for that at least.
No, I wouldn't necessarily say that.
No, Lou. You know, we come on your show, man, so that we get facts right. So we don't want to get the wrong facts out.
So this is kind of interesting. I've been doing some research on this, and this isn't the first scandal involving Joe Biden and deep fakes, because I think it was last July, there was somebody claiming that a video that he had made was fake. And that turned out to be not true. And now the White House is talking about cryptographically identifying everything that comes out of the White House.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, this is not a new thing for politicians. It's just, yeah. I think we're starting to become more aware of it.
We are, but I think the bigger problem is the kinds of solutions being proposed, to solve this problem, right? So there's two variants of the problem. One is let's watermark everything that comes out at the source. And then the second one is cryptographically providing stuff, that comes out of the White House. And, you know, like one of the really interesting things with watermarks is that in the Biden robocall, when a lot of journalists tried to look at the watermark that potentially a system like 11 Labs puts into the system, and that's how their deepfake detection system detects, is this real or is this generated by us? When the reporters tried to run it through that system, it came back saying it's 2% likely to be generated by us. So the watermark had gotten completely stripped out, largely because you recorded the audio with, you created the audio with 11 Labs or whichever AI app you used. Then you played it on the telephony channel. The telephony channel has a whole bunch of, pretty antiquated codecs. You have all of the transmission effects.
Back up a second. What is telephony channel?
So the phone call, right? Like it was a robocall to all to folks, right? And so you're going through, you're not only playing a piece of audio, but you're playing it through this really low fidelity channel. And then you're having it go through all of the transmission points. And so what ended up happening is that the final audio that people received, the watermark just got completely stripped out.
Okay.
And so the fact is that, and this wasn't an active adversary, right? Like, so an active adversary wasn't present to strip out these watermarks, and yet the watermark got stripped out. If you have an active adversary, there's this great study from University of Maryland, which says that if you can detect a watermark, that is, you as a good person can detect a watermark, a bad guy can detect a watermark and can delete that watermark. So they can delete watermarks to the effect of 99%. So the fact is that watermarks will be great at catching the most unsophisticated of bad guys, but they're still a good mechanism, right? Like, you at least catch, you know, the script kiddies and the basic people who are trying to do audio manipulation. And then cryptographically signing is another interesting thing, but how are you going to share keys? How are you going to do public key cryptography if you want to go down the public key cryptography route, right? Like, so.
Well, yeah, they don't necessarily have to, you don't necessarily have to know that that cryptographic key is in there. Like, I know.
That's a watermark, which will get.
In the semiconductor industry, there are a couple of companies that I know of, and actually there's a fairly big lawsuit going on over patent infringement about this. They can put a cryptographic watermark into the semiconductor code. And so that if somebody comes up and steals that code or puts a significant portion of their code into another design, if you have the key, you plug it in and it'll show where the watermark is. But without that key, you can't see the watermark. So
that's just a watermark. But
you said if you can recognize it, then the bad guy can recognize it. But if you
delete it.
Yeah, but the thing is, if nobody can see it, if the only person that can actually see the watermark is the person with the key on the thumb drive, then they're the ones that can say, no, this isn't us because we put a cryptographic key code into this, and we know that this isn't us.
Yeah, but think about it, right? Like, if you are on a thumb drive, you're saying this, wherever this cryptographic key is, it's located in a particular position. When you're inserting it into bits and bytes of audio, it's a much more complicated thing, right? Like, what you're trying to do is insert it such that it's part of the audio stream. Because if you put it at the beginning of the audio stream, then you could keep that portion the same. So Joe Biden saying, what a bunch of malarkey, and change the rest of the audio. So you have to spread it across through the entire audio.
Right.
If you're spreading it across through the entire audio, then the point is, one, you have to make sure it doesn't mess up with the audio itself, because they're bits and bytes which get converted to audio sound. But at the same time, you then have to detect it. So how do you detect it if it's spread all the way through? So, I get that you could do it on a chipset, but cryptographic stuff, watermarks in audio are going to get eliminated no matter what. If you spread it across, it's going to get eliminated. So,
Okay. So what is it about, because I was reading that you were able to identify, it was this particular company that their technology used it. How do you determine where this technology originates? I thought that was fascinating.
Yeah. So the way this works is, the last time, Lou, we had an incredibly interesting conversation where I was talking about how, you know, your audio tends to have, you know, these spatial and temporal anomalies, especially when you create them with a text-to-speech synthesizer, which are very different than the way humans speak. What is super interesting is every single TTS system, and in our 20 million deepfake data set, we have about over 120 of these profiled. Every one of them is inhuman in a very specific way. They do things, they put in anomalies, or they leave behind telltale signs of somebody using them to create a deepfake in very, very specific ways. And this is what we call a fake print. And this is what goes towards our explainability portion. So one of the things is, when we deploy, just saying it's a deep fake is one thing, but then being able to actually say this deep fake's actually coming from this particular tool is the more important thing. Because if you are trying to detect generative AI apps, which are themselves not explainable with technology that's not explainable, you're like building a house of cards. And so that fake print is what allows us to detect this came from 11 labs in this particular case.
Okay. Yeah, I was listening to a BBC report. Yep. And there's a British game show called Countdown.
Oh wow!
And it's mostly just a bunch of comedians, you know, bagging on each other. Yeah. But what they do is they put up a bunch of random numbers, and then they're supposed to come up with the largest number possible by adding, subtracting, multiplying, dividing, that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And the woman they have, you know, on Wheel of Fortune, you know, turning the letters. Yeah. Well, she happens to be a math savant.
Wow.
Okay. I mean, she's freaking gorgeous. I mean, she's just got a great sense of humor. But yeah. I mean, she's one of these kind of people that can do, you know, the square root of a seven digit number inside of 5 seconds in her head. You know, so I mean, she's just amazing. Wow. But the BBC was showing how they could use deep fake to fake an interview with her.
Wow.
Where she said, I'm really bad at maths. Okay. But what she said is, I'm really bad at maths. I'm really bad at faking it. They are feeding me the numbers through an earpiece.
Wow.
Okay. But the thing is, when I was listening to the interview, I'm going, well, that's a fake. Because when she said, I'm really bad the first time, and then I'm really bad the second time, it was absolutely the same. And human beings, when they're repeating the same phrase over and over again, there's always some variant.
Yeah.
I mean, that's why radio people will, when they're recording a commercial, they record it 30 times before they finally get the take that they want.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so far, whenever they have these contests, can you guess a deep fake? Yeah. Either audio or video, I'm generally around 80%.
Okay. You're probably one of the few, and we should probably get you to try some of the deep fakes that the Pindrop team has.
I'd like to see that, because you probably got things that are tougher than what I've been hearing.
Yeah. And, you know, what we've seen, but, you know, having said that, Lou, even when we started Pindrop, one of the first people I was interviewing is a Bell engineer who had a golden ear. Like, he could listen to the networks and say, oh, this is this particular switching network that went down, right? And so there are people who've got very good ears, and you might be one of those people who's got very good ears and who can pick up these things, but that's not the average human. The average human actually has an accuracy of 57%, which is 7% better than chance at figuring out a deep fake, a good deep fake versus, or a deep fake versus a real human. And so, you know, we are really bad at this because our ears, or our brains confuse our ears to pattern match. So if things are close enough, you're like, okay, that must be the same.
Okay, interesting. So you mentioned earlier that you announced something yesterday. What was it?
Yeah. So we announced our audio deepfake detection system for phone calls, which is what was used to identify President Biden's robocall as, one, a deepfake, and then, two, the system behind that robocall. We announced the public launch of it because, you know, we've been talking a lot about deepfakes, but we've been in shadow mode, in beta mode with a lot of the big financial customers, insurance providers, and things like that, seeing what are the deepfakes that are happening out in the wild. And as we started seeing and catching these and tuning the system such that you're catching the deepfakes while maintaining a very low false positive, we got to the point where we got really good. And our customers felt we'd reached a point where they could operationalize it within their systems. What does that mean? That is, if I'm a person calling in to one of these people who's buying the system, two things can happen. One, I'm never going to enroll or use your voice for authentication if it was a deep fake trying to enroll the voice. And two, from a fraud protection standpoint, if it's a deep fake, I'm going to immediately take action to prevent that that particular person from doing anything on an account. So they'd gotten to the point where the operational, their ability to operationalize it was really, really strong. And that's why one of our customers who shadow moded this is a bank called First National Bank of Omaha. They had a big testimonial. So, you know, we got to the point where we were feeling really good about the technology. And so we GA'd that technology yesterday.
Oh, so you've just announced you actually have a customer, right?
Yeah, FNBO was one of the beta customers. Yes.
Okay, excellent. What about that bank in Hong Kong with the Zoom conference call?
Oh, that is a crazy story. You know,
I mean, have they contacted you yet?
No, we haven't. We're not in Hong Kong, but you know, good point. We should probably do a little more of awareness. But we've just started going to APJ. We've hired two people in APJ. So as we start looking, and we're not going to Hong Kong yet. Our focus right now is Australia, and so we've started there. But my hope is, you know, as we continue, getting successful, we're able to go to places like Hong Kong and solve those problems as well.
Is there ever going to be a consumer version of this?
We are working really hard, but the thing is that you're absolutely right. We think a consumer version is absolutely necessary, but it's really, I mean, it can't just be, you know, we have the technology to do it. And it can do it in real time. So as soon as a call comes in, within the first couple of seconds, being able to say this is a deep fake. But the problem is we need to be able to get the call. And on the consumer side, there's only two places you can get the call. One is at the carrier and the other is at the handset manufacturer. So yeah, you need to partner with these folks. And that's what we're looking to do.
Excellent. Yeah. Well, that gives me a lot of hope. Yeah. Actually, I've got a lot of hope altogether. You know, I was reading yesterday just in the area of ransomware.
Yeah.
That 2 years ago, yeah, 89% of companies were paying the ransom.
Wow. Okay.
Last year, 29% paid the ransom.
That's incredible. That's a great stat.
And half of those paid less than half of what the original ransom was.
Wow.
So it looks like we're getting to the point where we're finally starting to catch up and maybe get past the criminals, yeah, with our technology. And yeah, and it sounds like that's what you're doing too on your side. So you know, instead of being five steps behind, they're hearing our footsteps. I think that's, yeah, good.
That's good. And it's particularly important because I was reading this other stat that said this 4 billion people going to vote this year, right? So that's how.
Oh, yeah, yeah, it. Yeah.
So I think we are there, but we can't get there fast enough because my big worry is, you know, stuff like this on election night, you don't know what kinds of votes you can swing if you aren't monitoring, right? And so, I think we need to get there faster. But you're right. We at least, I mean, I think there's a lot of great companies in this space building great detection technology against these attackers.
All right. Well, VJ, thank you very much. I appreciate the time and thanks for keeping us safe.
Thanks so much, Lou. Appreciate as always getting on, this podcast.
All right. Okay, so here's my big fat idea for how we might deal with this particular problem. And specifically, we're talking about generative AI. Artificial intelligence has been used for decades in various industrial and technology areas. That's quite legitimate. But when we're talking about generative AI, it's a whole new ball game. It is a wild west, because anyone can get this stuff at almost zero cost and use it for whatever reason they want. And that in itself is problematic. And so I have been in contact with several state and federal legislators about this idea. I have yet to hear back from them as to what their thoughts are. But I'm wondering if it isn't time to consider licensing the use of generative AI for communications purposes in the lease. I mean, we have laws to license the use of motor vehicles. We have laws to
license the use of drone technology. You have to have a license to practice medicine or to practice law in anywhere. And generative AI, improperly used, has just as devastating the impact of any of those technologies. So why not? When drones started becoming a real problem, the FAA stepped in. The FCC could come in and actually do the same thing, and they already have started taking some steps related to that. But maybe we need it to codify it into legislation so that if you're going to use it for communications purpose, the companies that provide the technology for you, they have to know that you have been licensed, and that means you've been trained in how to use it properly. Not only in to not impersonate other people, but to understand the basic laws regarding libel and slander and the use of any communications technology illegally. It needs to be put under the same concept. So that's my bright idea. And if you think that might be a good idea, time to get a hold of your legislator and ask them the same questions. So that's it this week for Crucial Tech. If you have questions or concerns, you can contact me at cyberprotectionmagazine.com. That's cyberprotection-magazine.com. And if you haven't signed up for a subscription, there are two levels. There is the free one where essentially all you have to do is give us your email address and you will be able to access quite a bit of the content that we have. But we have unique content that is behind a paywall, and you're going to have to use that to get in. And it's only $25 a month, and that helps support the work that we're doing here so that we don't have to worry too much about advertising. Speaking of advertising, I want to thank again our sponsors, Safety National Insurance, because they have made it possible for us to do this work, and we appreciate that. So, this has been Lou Covey with Crucial Tech, a Foot Washing Media production. Thanks for listening.